years ago, I used to listen to specific DJ shows very regularly because like they exposed me to music I liked and I liked the hosts and stuff, I guess, as well. But I haven't done that in ages. Now I just listen to whatever, you know, the algorithm gives me.
If only we could take our love of reading to a new level.
Well, I've always wanted to start a book club.
Book club!
For
masochists and other deviants.
Hello and welcome to the Book Club for Masochists, where we read and discuss all the genres and types of literature, regardless of our actual interest in them.
Every month, we read books from a new, randomly picked genre. Then on the podcast, we discuss our reading choices, experiences, opinions, appeal factors, and other related topics as friends and library workers.
In this episode number 137, we're discussing the genre of music nonfiction. I feel like I should have sung that part.
Music nonfiction.
Thank you.
My name is RJ. I'm a librarian in Vancouver, BC, which is located on the traditional, ancestral, and unceded land of the Musqueam, Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, and Stolo people.
My name is Anna. I'm a librarian in Las Vegas, Nevada, USA.
My name is Matthew. I'm also a librarian currently in Las Vegas, Nevada, USA.
Las Vegas, Nevada is located on the traditional homelands of the Nuuvi Southern Paiute people, including the Las Vegas Paiute tribe and the Moapa Band of Paiutes.
My name is Megan. I am in the National Capital Region of Canada, which is located on the unceded traditional territory of the Algonquin Anishinaabe. Announcements?
So many announcements. Announcement number one. Stephanie, we have received your message about Christmas story suggestions. We will send you some. If you are looking for book recommendations or story recommendations, you can send us a message. There's a link on our website. You can request us to give you some recommendations. RJ, our winter holiday expert, is on the case for this one.
Yes.
But also, we did do an episode several years ago specifically about winter holiday related books. If anyone is looking for, I guess by the time this episode will come out, it is that time of year almost.
Wasn't that a like nonfiction?
It was everything.
Oh, was it? I can't remember.
I think there was a mix. Yeah.
Our idea, because that was still relatively early in the book club, was what you would put in a winter holiday display.
Yeah, okay.
It's a fun idea. Something we could revisit potentially.
I was going to say, I just now realized that I have a Christmas-related music nonfiction book that I could have, should have read this month.
Oh, I have had that realization before during the middle of an episode that I'm like, oh, that's what I should have read. Also, I just caught my hair in the back of my dress and I am now stuck.
Oh, no.
Oh, I think I got it. Okay.
Because we've done holidays, we've done music. This book is out of commission.
I believe one of the books by authors of color book list that we've put together is holiday related books as well.
That is true.
So that is up on our website. Speaking of our book lists by authors of color,
we have one for this episode, as we have one for all of our recent episodes. I assume you're throwing to me.
Yeah. We just established how I don't want to talk for 50% of this episode.
Yes, check our show notes on this episode and on our website, bookclub4m.com, for our book list for this and all of our previous episodes. That is a book list of nonfiction music books by Black, Indigenous, and People of Color authors. I don't think I have more to say about it than that. Go check it out. Yeah, we do those to help folks diversify their own reading and their reader's advisory.
Mm-hmm. Next announcement. We're going back in time to the spooky time of 2 weeks ago when I forgot to tell you all about the panel I was on. I was on a panel in the Manga in Libraries Spooky and Scary Manga panel. It is on YouTube if you would like to watch it, and there'll be a link to that and a link to the resources of book titles and stuff as well. It was a lot of fun. People seem to enjoy it. It's fun to talk about spooky comics. The panel had some really great people on it as well. We had some editors from Viz. We had someone who, like an academic who studies spooky stuff, Japanese spooky stuff. We had some other library folks, so it was a fun discussion. Final announcement is usually when we pick our genres, we roll a dice at random, or we use a random number generator, really, and it picks the list. However, coming up next, not immediately, but soon, is romance fiction, as we do every year. We have an episode on romance fiction out at the beginning of February. And so we are asking you to vote in a Twitter poll of which of four potential randomly selected romance genres we'll be reading this year or next year, whenever it happens to be. So the poll will go live when this podcast goes up. So the poll will be open from today, Tuesday, November 2nd, to Tuesday, November 9th, when it will close. So you have 1 week to vote from today. And the potential topics for us to – the potential romance subgenres that we can be reading are Amish romance, contemporary romance, fantasy or fairy tale romance, and Western romance. So pick which one of those you'd like us to read and go and vote. And if you do not use Twitter, send us an email. Or a message. Use. We're on so many platforms. Send us a message somewhere and we'll count your vote.
That was announcements. What is music?
What is music?
Well, I have recently discovered that we cannot put clips of music into the show. Either Spotify gets mad at us. So probably none. Maybe not in this episode. We'll see.
I think we have a stronger case for including them in this episode than any other episode we've done. Because in this episode, we're actually, in theory, commenting on the music. Instead of just including it, like, you know, as a goof.
That is a good point, and it leads us up to our next announcement, which I forgot about, which is that we've made playlists for this episode. You can find them on YouTube and on Spotify. They'll be linked in the show notes, and they are music from that were from books that we read this month. I was going to say you can listen along, but you can't really listen along to
two things at once.
You're mixing the reading process the listening process.
I guess you can put it on at the same time if you really want to, but I don't think it would be a great experience. So yeah, books about music.
Yes, music nonfiction. I thought this was a really fun genre because if you really wanted to, you could have just borrowed like a book of sheet music or guitar chords.
I was about to say that you cannot do that.
You can if you can read music.
I don't think that counts as nonfiction music. I think it has to be about music.
Well, you're just a spoil sport.
Seriously. Yes,
I am.
I would have counted it. A portion of my book, one of my books, included musical notation and lyrics.
Yeah, I think the issue that I might take with reading just printed music is not that it is the wrong genre, not that it's not nonfiction, but it is the wrong format. So it is more akin to like listening to a CD of music for this genre, which doesn't totally make sense.
Like we did literary criticism earlier this year, and I think this falls into the same thing. If you were like, oh, I read this novel for literary criticism, I would be like, that's not literary criticism. And that's how I also, if you're reading music without analysis or surrounding information about it, you're reading the music, not nonfiction about any music.
But the sheet music is going to be in the section with the text about the music, though.
Okay, but can I ask this? Why are we arguing about this? Nobody who cares about genres actually cares about whether or not sheet music counts in music nonfiction.
I'm sure there's one person who feels very strongly about us. Please send us an email.
Please do. I will say I do think that music nonfiction as a genre feels a little more expansive to me than literary criticism because I feel like it can include like music criticism and commentary, like you were saying, Matthew, but whether or not it includes sheet music, it can also include things like biographies of musicians. It can include like how to play a ukulele, like a guide to how to play music. Mm-hmm. That, you know, isn't necessarily sheet music, but is more of a instructional and practical nature. Or it can be, I'm sure there's other things I'm not thinking of. One of the things I read, it was a very like sort of personal poetry and essay collection that incorporated a lot of references to music, but was not strictly music criticism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a few things that I saw that struck me were sort of a history of music within our use of it, and then also like the science of how sound affects us.
Yeah, science and psychology was one that I didn't recall, but yeah, there definitely is a lot of books about music, not about specific bands or songs or genres, but about how music works and how our brains do.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't Oliver Sacks have a book on that?
Yes, he does. I checked it out and didn't read it.
yeah, fair. I quite possibly have it on my shelf here somewhere and did not even think of it. I'm not even sure where it is if I do have it, but I kind of think I might have it. Yeah, I agree, though, that one of the fun aspects about this as a genre is that it actually covers a lot of very interesting subgenres that are actually active reading areas for people. So it's a little more like, you know, fantasy that has all these subgenres of different types of fantasy underneath it, if you're thinking of a fiction version, right? But this is a nonfiction version that actually has some really active and interesting subgenres within it. Just like you guys described, like these are all things that I think of as subgenres of music, nonfiction, and we're all different ways that I thought about, you know, I could take this as, I feel like biographies is a huge one, but like biographies is like, I know we have that as a genre on our list, but it's also such a giant genre of reading that I'm like, oh man, that's got a billion subgenres under it.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of like the flavor that you could read for every one of our nonfictions if you really wanted to.
Yeah. And also memoirs.
Mm-hmm.
It's also a music thing. Is that separate from biography would be...
Mm. Yeah, music memoir, music biography.
Mm-hmm.
Music how-to, music science and...
History and psychology.
Etc. Music criticism, music theory. Yeah. Yeah, many different.
So did we read any of those books?
Wait, background.
Do we like music?
Have you ever chosen willingly to read music nonfiction in your past? Or unwillingly, I guess.
I do own more than one, I think, book about Christmas music, which I have like started reading. I don't think I've actually sat down and read through the whole of any of those, but obviously that is a niche interest of mine.
How many episode podcast niche interest?
Oh boy, we're on like 290 something. Yeah, harkpodcasts.com. I'm trying to think. I know I read one of the, is it, oh gosh, I'm going to say the wrong number, which will be really embarrassing. 33 and one
third.
Third? Yes. Perfect. 33 and one third series of books, which if you don't know is very short little books about each one dedicated to a different album. And I read John Darnielle, who is the main member of the Mountain Goats. He did the one for a Black Sabbath album. And it, a lot of them are just like nonfiction essay format is my understanding. But I don't know if that actually counts as background in this genre because he did write his as a like short novella. He just wrote it from like the point of view of a young person in a, who has been like committed to a, mental institution, for lack of a better word at the moment, who is had his Black Sabbath cassette tapes taken away and is arguing why he should get them back and why Black Sabbath is great.
Has anyone else read any of those?
I haven't read those.
Well, I wanted to mention because of that series, my brother, who is far more into music than I am, recommended the one that John Darnielle, or how, I don't know how his last name is pronounced. We're great at this. That he wrote. And also the Celine Dion one, which is apparently well regarded.
What? Cool.
Some of the others considerably less so regarded. But speaking of Celine Dion, I read a book called We Ought to Know How Four Women Ruled the 90s and Changed Canadian Music, which is about Alanis Morissette, Shania Twain, Sarah McLachlan, and Celine Dion in the mid-90s, 1990s, which is a pretty decent book. It's not very long. It's just a few years old, so that's one I've read. I've also read Hip Hop Family Tree, or some of that, by Ed Piskor, which is kind of an interesting look at hip-hop, the history of hip-hop, in comic book form, which is pretty neat. Another comic person who did some nonfiction comics was Harvey Pekar, who did some nonfiction kind of essays about jazz music, which I remember reading a long time ago in American Splendor. And I've always wanted more people to do comics like that, like for doing them to write essays, which I think is a really interesting format that not a lot of people do, because honestly, it's probably really hard. And then I also read a few years ago, Burning Down the House, Punk Rock Revolution and the Fall of the Berlin Wall, which is all about like music in East Germany, which was a pretty interesting book. That's my experience.
I can't think of anything that I had read voluntarily, but when I was studying music, I both read a lot of sheet music and I had to read some history for my music history class. But I find like music criticism confusing. So unless it's like some other angle, I don't tend to read a lot of music related books.
I feel like this is something that I'm sure I've read more of in my life than I can immediately remember. But what I do know that I have read a significant amount of, and I've talked about it before, is Chuck Klosterman's essay collections, like Fargo, Rock City, and Killing Yourself to Live. And there's a few others that are not popping to mind at the moment. I haven't read any of his fiction. And honestly, I have to admit, I'm not sure I'm interested. I do enjoy the way that he does music criticism as tied to both his life and to the way that we are experiencing and understanding the world, but in sort of a, I don't know, pithy sort of way. So I'm not sure I'm taking it terribly seriously as I'm reading it. I feel like I did read Hanif Abdurraqib, Can't Kill Us Until They Kill Us, 3-4 years ago. I can't quite remember exactly. I really enjoyed that. And it was an interesting comparison to Chuck Klosterman, because I feel like they write somewhat of a similar type of essay. But I actually really enjoyed and maybe took a little more seriously Abdurraqib's work than Klosterman's. Beyond that, like, I once tried to read This Is Your Brain on Music, but got bored after, like, two chapters. And that's about all I could dredge up in my memory of my previous experience of reading on music, which I thought was kind of interesting, because I actually had really good reading experiences this month. So, I don't know. Maybe I should read more.
Is this something where we prefer to experience commentary and discussion about music in other formats now?
I don't know. I feel like with movies, I definitely watch a lot of video movie criticism, much more than I read like movie reviews. But I don't think that's true of music. I can't think of any like YouTube creators or anyone else.
I'm sure you've mentioned Todd in the Shadows before, RJ.
Oh, that's right. No, never mind. You're absolutely right. I watch Todd in the Shadows. I 100% do watch video music criticism.
That's a YouTube person who makes videos about specific songs.
Specific songs, specific albums. He has a few series. So he has like the One Hit Wonderland, where he talks about various one hit wonders and.
Those are the only ones I've ever watched.
Mm-hmm. Those are really fun. And yeah, there's some really good ones. I really enjoyed the one about Scatman.
Mm-hmm.
But he also does Train Records, which is a series looking at albums that like tanked various artists' careers. And he also does individual song reviews for recent stuff, and then does a year end, like, best and worst 10 songs of the year.
RJ, would you consider your podcast to be nonfiction about music?
I guess it is. I guess I kind of do this professionally.
Oh, yeah, you have a Patreon. You get paid.
Yeah, I kind of get paid. I definitely think our podcast is music nonfiction. It is definitely more on the sort of comedic and personal side than like the deep read on music side. We talk frequently about how we don't know that much about music.
That's because you just don't read those books about Christmas music that you have in your house, RJ.
It's true. It's true. I should. There's certainly other podcasts I can think of that cover music. I don't listen to any of them that frequently, but there's the Bill Buds podcast. There is, I only listen to the Mountain Goats. I've listened to a few episodes of that, actually. That is a podcast all about the Mountain Goats, featuring John Darnielle, lead singer of the Mountain Goats. There's also Punch Up the Jam, which I listened to a lot of for a while, which is also mostly comedy, but also about music. What was the last one? Is it Song Exploder? Song?
Yeah, that sounds right. I feel like I've listened to one or two episodes of that, but not recently.
Yeah, that one's quite good, though.
Yeah, I used to, years and years ago, this has been a very long time, like seriously a decade ago, I used to listen to All Songs Considered quite a bit. And there was a brief period where they had a big influence on like what music I listened to, because I was kind of at one of those weird stages where I'm like, nobody around me listens to anything I do, and I want to listen to new music. And I'm also stuck doing a job all day long where I'm not quite mentally engaged enough, but not unengaged enough that I can like listen to anything. So like, I need music.
That was going to be my next question, which is another form of, in some ways, music nonfiction could be radio, like music shows, which have DJ people talking in between the songs, and they might be talking about the song as well. I'm thinking specifically about my friend Kathleen, who does a quote unquote pirate radio stream on Twitch every week called Brave New Faves, where she just plays music that she likes and just talks about it. As well. And it's, there's no recording because it's illegal. but you can tune in live and watch it and listen to it. It's like a discussion group thing, you know, cause there's people in the chat and talking with her and stuff about it as well. And it's kind of an interesting thing. And years ago, I used to listen to, there were like specific, like BBC Radio 6 stations, like DJ shows that I listened to, very regularly, because like they exposed me to music I liked and I liked the hosts and stuff, I guess, as well. But I haven't done that in ages. Now I just listen to whatever, you know, the algorithm gives me.
Does anybody remember what the movie is called that's like set in the 80s and the guy is a pirate radio?
Turn up the volume or pump up the volume? Something about the volume.
There's several of them.
All right.
Matthew is turning to the internet, Googling during the episode.
Pump Up the Volume, 1990 coming-of-age drama starring Christian Slater.
Oh, that sounds about right.
See, I was thinking of The Boat That Rocked, but that's about pirate radio in the 1960s.
So when you ask that question about whether or not the reason maybe I don't have as much experience with reading music nonfiction is because maybe we take our music nonfiction in a different format. Uh-huh. I actually thought about that in terms of like what I associate music nonfiction with is very heavily the memoir and biography style, where it's like take a group or a person and just expound about their history of how they became who they are. And the degree to which I associate that genre with that specific subgenre has kept me away from reading music stuff, because I'm just like, I'm not a biography reader. I'm not a memoir reader. It's not my format. And I'm also really, really not a celebrity reader in any way. Like, it just, Like, even people that I actually am like, oh, you seem like a pretty cool person. I just don't want to read about your life. I just don't. So, like, that has kept me away from it. And that might be, as I've been reading things for this month, it might have restricted what I considered music nonfiction and thus reduced the degree to which I could have experienced some things that I would actually enjoy.
I'd say there's also, like, vast differences in what can fall under the area of, like, a music biography, you know? Because you can have very different types of works that are produced in that area.
I mean, you can have the, like, I was thinking almost immediately of, like, the books for, like, teens and tweens that are, like, boy bands and stuff that were so popular when I was growing up.
Yes.
That is a form of music nonfiction.
Exactly.
Biography that I would totally never read.
The ones that librarians are very excited to weed from their collections.
Well, but
they
realize
they don't circulate.
Yes, but, you know, when they first come out and they're actually on the fresh artist of the time, they circulate quite well. And there's good reasons for that, and I'm glad people enjoy them. But, like, that's not the type for me. But there's also ones that are very, like, you know, the dirt on types, and there are ones that are celebrating a genre, and there are ones that are, you know, there's just a lot, like you say, a lot of different ways to take even just a biography and swing it at many different styles. Oh, I did actually think of something else I realized that I read that counts as music nonfiction, which is I went through a period in, I don't know, my early 20s, my mid 20s, where I read a bunch of Henry Rollins books. So I read a bunch of Henry Rollins books.
It surprises me a little.
I know. It surprises me a little.
Also, in my mind, his books are just about, like, bodybuilding.
No.
I imagine they're collections of angry rants.
Iron doesn't lie, Matthew. And in terms of how we're looking for things, since I think, Anna, you mentioned being turned off by the biography, autobiography type of music nonfiction, I have to say that I also stayed away from that particular genre. And so I looked at section of the music nonfiction. So I was influenced by TikTok and cool sounding history books. So that's how I went.
I had something on my shelf that I really wanted to read. So I went for that one first. And then once I was just about done with that one, I was like, oh, I have a little bit of time. Maybe I could fit in one other, which I didn't actually entirely fit in. I started it, but I didn't finish it because I got all excited to do a Halloween reread and put my time into that Halloween reread instead. Then went back to the bookstore. And spent a little while looking through their shelves for options, got a little frustrated on that, and then did finally find something that was actually has turned out to be excellent. I've really enjoyed.
That bookstore definitely has a type of music book on its shelves.
It has a lot of them. It's got a big music section for the size of that bookstore and the size of its other sections.
And if you want a book about jazz music, they've got you covered. You want a book on electronic music, they'll special order it for you, I'm sure.
That one's, I got a book about electronic music from that store.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Matthew's looking very dubiously at the cover of the book that I'm showing
like
him.
It doesn't seem like Detroit techno on the cover, Anna, so it's clearly not the sort of thing I'm talking about.
No, it's about DJing. DJ culture and electronic music, and about somebody who got into that in kind of the very early days of electronic music. We'll talk about this. This is a very good book, and I'm enjoying it thoroughly.
Read, in quotes, attempted to read three books. I checked out a ton of books, which I tend to do. There were three that I started reading, one of which has been on my to read for a while. It's an author that I had read once before and wanted to try another title from. And that is also very popular. I'll just say that that is the one that you already mentioned, Anna, They Can't Kill Us Until They Kill Us by Hanif Abdurraqib. Yes, I started reading that one, and then it was due back at the library. And so I started something else, but then I did not return They Can't Kill Us Until They Kill Us when it was due because I was enjoying it. And so I, instead of devoting my full time to any book, bounced between three different books, yes, the other one that I, one of the other ones that I started, I had just seen around the shelves on my library and wanted to check it out. And also wanted to mention it because it is really hard to find. I think it counts as music related. I could be wrong because I, you know, read like 10% of it. Did not come up under a catalog search for music, you know, limited to my branch, because that would be way too many books if I was just searching my city's entire collection for music nonfiction. But trying to see what I had locally, this one did not come up. It's about a, it's sort of an autobiography. It's a memoir. It's a memoir of someone who was in various punk bands in the 70s and 80s, and it also did not come up when I searched punk. So I kind of started reading it because I was interested, but also because I just want to talk about it on the podcast because I feel like it's really hard to find otherwise. I want people to know it exists. And the last one that I started reading and got maybe 25% of the way through was when I went to my local bookstore and thought, well, maybe I'll just buy a copy of They Can't Kill Us Until They Kill Us, because I am enjoying it a lot. But they did not have it. They did have another book from the same press, and it looked good. So I bought that and started reading that. And in theory, we'll finish that because it, I own it now.
Why don't you talk about that book, RJ, to start us off?
Which one? All of them? So going backwards in the sequence of when I started reading these.
It's freshest in your memory.
I suppose, yeah. The one that I bought at my local bookstore from their music section is 808s and Other Worlds, Memories, Remixes, and Mythologies by Sean Avery Medlin. And this is the one that I mentioned is a collection of personal essays and poems, poetry. And certainly there is a lot of music mentioned and specific songs and artists referenced and incorporated throughout. It is a memoir. It's, you know, a little bit genre bendy because it is a collection of essays and poems and, is music nonfiction, but is also, you know, memoir and whatever else it is. But, it is like very much, themed on masculinity and specifically Black masculinity and the cultural forces that shape what that means in America. And so far, you know, I've only read 25% of it, but it's been very good. This is by $2 Radio is the publisher, which is the same publisher of They Can't Kill Us Until They Kill Us. And they're, because of their name, $2 Radio, and their logo, which is a radio, I had a moment where I was like, oh, is this a press dedicated to music nonfiction? No, it is not. They publish all sorts of things. But, you know, they are a small independent press that is based in Columbus, Ohio, but printed in Canada. I had a confused moment where I was wondering if this was Canadian content, but it is not. It is just printed in Canada.
So it doesn't follow the Maple regulations for CanCon, then?
No, no.
Canada jokes. Link in the show notes.
One thing that I really like about this press, this is about this press more than about this individual book, the press on the copyright information page, it includes recommended reading locations for all of the books that they publish, or at least these two that I picked up this month.
That's funny.
Recommended reading locations for 808s and Other Worlds is during long car rides to neighboring cities, on a bed share or sofa in the morning, at night by a stereo, playing peachtrumentals with friends and family who also love rhythm and poetry, and pretty much anywhere because books are portable and the perfect technology, which I think is the last one that they include in all of their books. But
okay, so for any library staff listeners, here's a great display idea for you.
Yes, reading locations. Yeah. Books by reading location.
Yep.
Don't even have to bring a charger.
That's right. Well, maybe. You might be reading an ebook.
Or an audiobook.
Yes. So I know so very little about music, I did not realize that the title 808s and Other Worlds was a reference to a Kanye album. But it is. And that is an artist that's, I think, is going to be, you know, has been referenced at least a few times in what I've read and I think is featured prominently throughout. But yeah, I'm enjoying it. If you like poetry, if that all sounds intriguing, you should check it out. 808s and Other Worlds by Sean Avery Medlin.
I don't have a segue, but I have a couple books that I did read at least part of. So the first one, like I mentioned, the TikTok book. And what I'm referring to is this sea shanty trend that started going around, I think, March earlier this year. When everybody started singing the Wellerman song, which is apparently an Australian whaling ship.
Not a sea shanty.
Not a sea shanty. No. But this book, Sailor Song, The Shanties, Ballads of the High Seas by Gary Smythe, or Smith, I'm not sure, and illustrated by Johnny Hanna, is more about the songs they would actually sing on the ship during the 19th century. It's 160 pages, printed in 2020. And as I made reference to earlier, it includes both written music that he has done based on what he thinks probably the notation and the time signature of the songs were, plus the lyrics. Not all of the possible lyrics, because there's a lot of borrowing going on and a lot of dirty lyrics, I guess you could say, that he didn't want to include. And so he sets the context for each of the songs. He includes a bit about, you know, what the songs were used to do while the sailors were working on the boat, or if it was part of their downtime, entertainment value, that kind of thing. Includes a lot about what the life of the sailors were like when they were on shore, when they were on the boat. Historical art and photographs are included in the text, and you have these really colorful illustrations included as well. So it's a really pretty book to read, as well as learn more about how sea shanties were used.
Cool. I'll talk about my book on electronic music first, because I haven't finished this one either. I'm also, like RJ, probably only 25% of the way through, because like I said, I got distracted by a Halloween reread. But I do think I'll finish this. Similarly, own it, because I bought it at the bookstore. But also, I'm genuinely really enjoying it. I'm finding it fascinating. So it's called Uproot: Travels in 21st Century Music and Digital Culture by Jace Clayton, who's also known as DJ Rupture, apparently. He got into DJing, sounds like around 2000, and in 2001 released online some mix that got him fairly well known, and over the next couple of years he started getting international invites all over the place, sometimes by, like, you know, known people or brands or stuff like that. And so he's been DJing for quite a long time. Apparently he's also published some essays and stuff in the New York Times, the Washington Post, N+1, and some other locations. I really was not familiar with this person. Neither, like, their work does not fall into the realm of things that I pay much attention to. So, I don't know. It's just not on my radar in any way. The only reason I picked up this book, frankly, is because I actually went to the bookstore thinking I would get a different book. But I kind of, like, looked at it and was like, I'm not feeling this book. This is not, I think, the one I want. And then I was kind of looking around at other options nearby, and none of those were feeling right. And then I picked this one up and I was like, you know, why not? It's very much about the way that digital music has globalized due to the internet and to new music file sharing options in the world. And it's about his engagement with that. But he's also taking very much, genuinely a global look at this and actually going to visit places. He was actually based out of Madrid for quite a while. He is American, but has lived in a number of different places around the world, has traveled all over the world. And chapter number two or three, what is this one? Two, which is about auto-tune, has him going to actually visit Berber musicians in Morocco, but in Casablanca for a little while, but also in a bunch of other cities in Morocco, and talking to these existing Berber musicians. I tried to look a bunch of these musicians up on the internet and was like, I either can't find it or I'm finding it, but I can't tell because it's in a different language.
Yeah, it could be even a different alphabet.
Yeah, right. I was wow, this is digging deep here in terms of my ability to actually locate some of this stuff online. So anyways, I feel like I'm going to get a very interesting education in digital music and global digital music culture by reading this. And he's very readable. And writes quite well in an entertaining style. So I'm only 25% in, but I'm feeling pretty good about this one.
I will talk briefly about the one that I read, which I powered through and finished about 15 minutes before we started recording. I read Girls to the Front, the true story of the Riot Girl Revolution by Sarah Marcus. It's all about Riot Girl, which was a music and politics scene in the early 1990s. I did not like this book very much, primarily because I think it did not provide enough context for people that were not familiar with 80s and 90s American politics. It references how one of the drivers for Riot Girl was that the position of women was under attack, was they not doing great at that time. I'm like, you're not giving me examples and you're saying stuff about how the election in 91 was the election. Yeah. Okay. Was so important for women's rights, but it didn't say why. It about halfway through the book, it talked about some of this, but there was still a lot of context that was just missing that I could kind of guess at, but it's I'm not American and I'm not that old, you know? I am old now, clearly, but I'm not that old. So yeah. And then the other thing I didn't like was that at one point it described some people as many of them cut their bangs short and wore cotton vintage dresses with thrift store cardigans, librarian style. Annoyed me. I think the author was kind of too close to Riot Girl to talk about it in some ways. There was some interesting material in here, but I think it is taking too close of a look at too short a period of time. The entire book basically covers 3 years, and there's not a lot there, which is kind of a strange thing to say, but it's it makes the Riot Girl movement seem incredibly small. And then it got a lot of media attention because it was vaguely tied into Nirvana and grunge associated with that.
It sounds like a kind of a good historical document book of a very specific little slice and moment. One of those things where it's great that somebody took the time to do the research, because a lot of the materials, I'm sure, on that topic would be ephemera style yes. materials.
Well, it's there's a Riot Girl zine collection that someone I know has helped do. And Riot Girl was important because it helped show women and girls that they could make music in these scenes that were male dominated.
Doing an important thing doesn't necessarily mean you have to love it and enjoy the experience. It's okay.
The very depressing thing about this book is how it talks about how access to abortion was really under attack in the early 90s, and how that was something that kind of drove the women and girls in the scene to be more political. And I'm like, oh, wow, it's 30 years later and we're dealing with the exact same things right now, which is really upsetting.
Okay, RJ, I think we've circled back to you.
Well, I will mention briefly. I might do both of the other books that I started reading. One that I read a good chunk of, and one that I just got through the like introductions and the first few pages, but wanted to mention. That one is Disasterama, Adventures in the Queer Underground, 1977 to 1997 by Alvin Orloff, who was a member of a bunch of queercore bands during that period, including The Blow Dryers, I think, is the most prominent one that I've seen mentioned in association to him. I didn't finish the book, so I don't know all of the bands that he was in off the top of my head. This is the one that I had seen on the shelf and thought of it for this month, like, oh, that's probably a music book I could read and would enjoy, and didn't come up when I searched music and didn't come up when I searched punk. But certainly it is a memoir and involves like talking about the queer punk scene in, San Francisco, specifically, in the 80s primarily, but you know, 1977 to 1997. It is likely that just the impression that I get based on the fact that like, music and punk are not mentioned on the flap copy or in the title or subtitle, that it is much more focused on just growing up queer during that time period and living through the AIDS epidemic in the 80s in San Francisco. But I just wanted to mention it because I feel like there will be some listeners who would be really interested. And I haven't encountered a lot of other books about like the queercore music scene. But the one that I read the most of, which I have already said, was They Can't Kill Us Until They Kill Us by Hanifa Derbkeeb, which is very good. And I know Anna has talked about it on the show before, but I was really enjoying it. I really like his style. It is a collection of essays, and so far, it seems like every essay is dedicated to a different specific artist, rather than like specific songs or albums, but connecting that artist to Abdurraqib's own life and experience, or connecting like specific experiences, like he talks about going to a Bruce Springsteen concert and realizing that the only other Black people that he is seeing there are in, are there working, are in like service positions, or are cleaning up after the concert goers, and you know, connecting that to the way that Bruce Springsteen sings about work and blue collar life, which is one of the, you know, major themes of a lot of his music. They're all really good. Yeah. I could talk about any number of the artists that he covers. And they're also all really short, which makes it feel like a really fast and engaging read. I feel like each essay is not more than a couple of pages, and just the connections that he's making are so like clear and smart. And yeah, it was just a great read. And I'm hoping I'm able, I had to return it to the library because it was way overdue. But I did put a hold on the ebook. And so I'm hoping that I'll get a chance to read the rest of it soon. I wanted to mention the one that I had read by him before, was Vintage Sadness, which was a poetry collection. Specifically though, a friend gave it to me, several years ago now, I think before They Can't Kill Us Until They Kill Us even came out, possibly, or around the time it came out. But, that one specifically a friend gave to me because it was a friend who I had, we were working together and started listening to Carly Rae Jepsen at the same time. I put on Emotion at work with her, and we ended up like listening to it a lot and ended up a few years later going to see Carly Rae Jepsen in concert together with the Vancouver Symphony Orchestra. And so I think she gifted me Vintage Sadness by Hanif, because there is a piece in there about Carly Rae. There's also a piece in They Can't Kill Us Until They Kill Us about Carly Rae, which I appreciated. And I think that is an artist who has, like, in music nerd circles, there has been, like, critical acclaim for her, but I think there is still very much the mainstream conception of her as sort of a frivolous one-hit wonder pop artist. And so that's just something I you know, have a soft spot for in Abdur-Aqib's work, is his fondness for Carly Rae Jepsen.
I also read a work about pop music, kind of. And it's a collection of essays called Your History, The 12 Strangest Women in Music by Leslie Chow. It's a 2021 publication by Repeater Press. And she covers the time period is kind of late 70s up until like maybe like 2018 about, in terms of the music history covered. And she identifies a number of female musicians who were kind of a little weird or strange, or perhaps had some kind of potentially off-putting aspects of their music to talk about. And I didn't know everybody that she talked about or their music necessarily, so I spent like book in one hand and YouTube in the other as I went through the essays just to try and get a sense, because she's talking about like the sounds and the way that they're talking and like different aspects of the music and sometimes about the music videos themselves. So I really needed that kind of experience of what it was, because it's hard to get that out of text, I find. And so the women that she talks about, Nina Cherney, Shakespeare's sister, China Woman, the Tom Tom Club, Chaka Chan, Janet Jackson, Kate Bush, Sayd, TLC, Taylor Swift, Azealia Banks, Nicki Minaj, and Rihanna. And it was really interesting to see the kind of sound. Like, I think at one point she devotes several paragraphs to how woes and oohs are used in different styles of song to really give a different kind of emotion, and how your brain interprets that very differently than the traditional singer-songwriter poet might, in terms of how lyrics are used versus how these sounds are used within the songs. So that was really interesting, but also like, it's kind of like when they include pictures in a book, but they all put them in the middle of the book. And so you kind of have to decide at what point you're going to look at the pictures, because you get spoilers as to what's going on ahead of time if you look at them too soon. But if you wait too long, you don't have that mental image in your head of what they're talking about if the photos relate to different pieces of the story. But that was an interesting experience anyway.
I don't know if this is similar, but when reading Hip Hop Family Tree, I kept, like, when I didn't know the musicians, wanting to go off and listen to the tracks, but that slows down the reading experience so much.
Mm-hmm. It felt worth it, though, because enough of the artists were so unfamiliar to me. But it was kind of a toss-up. Like, I didn't listen to every single song that I didn't recognize, but I listened to enough that I felt like I had a good grasp of what she was talking about.
Okay. So my second one is also, again, by Hanif Abdur-Aqib. This is the one I actually finished this month. I had some trouble with, like, somebody asked me at one point what you were reading, and I was like, what exactly is the title? Because on the front, it says, this is the third book by Hanif Abdur-Aqib. It is a love letter to a group, a sound, and an era. It is called Go Ahead in the Rain, Notes to a Tribe Called Quest. And I was like, so technically, I believe the title is just Go Ahead in the Rain, Notes to a Tribe Called Quest. But I had this moment staring at the cover where I was like, where do I start? Yeah, also there's a little circle on it that says, inside the golden circle, it says, this is a circle that tells you this book is a New York Times bestseller.
Cover design.
Meta. So what I enjoyed, I literally picked this book up because of the author, because I had so very much enjoyed the first book that I read by him. And I wanted to see what he was, you know, doing with, you know, just what he was doing going forward. And so I picked this book up kind of really not knowing much of anything about A Tribe Called Quest. Matthew wants to tell a funny story, but I'm not going to let him.
I was going to say so little that you forgot who the book was even about.
Yeah, it's true. I forgot who the book was even about. That is true. So it really was not about the topic, but it was very interesting to read this book as somebody. I'm almost exactly the same age as him. So I'm basically reading a contemporary who also grew up in the same country as me. But this was in the era of like in the 80s and 90s, in the early 90s, when a lot of this book is set. Like, internet was not really quite as much a thing.
Culture moved more slowly.
Culture moved more slowly. But also it was easier to be disparate if your distance was far away. I grew up in Alaska. Like, just my culture was not quite the same as the rest of the United States. And so I experienced this history very differently and a lot behind what everybody else did.
It was interesting reading in the Riot Girl book about how focused it was in certain towns and cities, and how, like, in the rest of the country, it might have, well, not existed.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. That was definitely something that I could totally understand from my experience growing up, is like a lot of the stuff I learned about after the fact, I did not experience this contemporaneously to when it was happening. I also like this. I mean, this is the era in which, like, if you lived in Alaska, you're far enough north that if you were on the wrong side of the hill, you couldn't get satellite cable. And I was on the wrong side of the hill, so I couldn't get MTV, right? Like, even that kind of stuff, right? So I just did not have connection to this directly. So it was really cool to get both his perspective as a Black man in America on this, but also just, I was like, I lived through this, but, like, I did not experience this either as a Black person or Black man, or just kind of at all during that time for a whole variety of reasons. And I grew up in a very different kind of culture and space. So it was very interesting to kind of be brought back to it and to re-experience it and to kind of pick out little bits and pieces of it that sort of bled into my space, but it was very little. And so I actually, like, I feel like I got an important re-education in a way, reading this. But at the same time, I just love the way he writes, and he very much relates all of this back into his life and his experiences. We're also unpacking a little bit about the humanity of these people. It's very much about kind of his interpretation of, and I don't know enough of the history around this group to know, like, if his interpretation is fact or if his interpretation is based on others' interpretations or what was going on exactly of, like, who these people are and how they're making music together and what their relationships are together. Like, some of it I understand and I know where it's coming from, and some of it is like, I don't understand where that's coming from. But, you know, some of it is like he writes it both as essays about his experience of this, as essays about what they're doing, but also some of them are letters that he's writing to them about his interpretations and experience of what they're doing and what their music is about. I listened to a whole bunch of A Tribe Called Quest for a couple of weekends as I read this book. I had a very good time reading it. I'm very glad I did. I totally recommend it. I continue to think that his writing is just absolutely excellent. So, you know, as frankly, I don't care what he's writing about, I'm just going to keep reading him. but he actually does have some other books that I'm really interested to read. I do have another book by him on my shelf that I just have not gotten to yet, but I am definitely going to, because I just really like this writer.
Yeah. His most recent one, which might be the other one that you have, A Little Devil in America.
Yes, that's it.
Notes in Praise of Black Performance. Yeah, so that one's on our BIPOC book list for this episode.
Awesome.
And it was also, it's also on the short list for the National Book Award nonfiction.
Hey.
Ooh.
Super. I'm really excited to read that one. That one felt a little bit more like maybe the, like, topic was a little more in my wheelhouse. But honestly, when I read this one, I didn't realize how much the topic was actually going to be in my wheelhouse.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, despite the fact that he came from a totally different perspective than me, and there's no way I can have this person's experiences or anything like them, I am the person I am. I am a white woman in America. So, like, there's that. But I still somehow feel like I have a better understanding of my experience of this stuff, of the way... not just the way this all played out, but even how I relate to it, just from his relation of his experience to it. I don't know. It's very interesting. He's a very good writer.
He writes with a lot of, like, emotional clarity.
Yes. Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
I feel, like, very, yeah, connected to like, the feelings and experiences that he's describing, even though, you know, they're very different from my own.
Totally. That's a very good way of putting it, RJ. Bacon, did you have another one, or did we wrap that up?
I've got one last one that I'll mention briefly. I didn't finish it. I got about a third of the way through. It's called Everybody's Doing It. Sex, Music, and Dance in New York from 1840 to 1917, written by Dale Cockrell. It's a 2019 publication by the W.W. Norton Company, which is where I bought all my music history books when I was in school. And it's a history of popular music in brothels, dance halls, saloons, dives of New York. Covers a lot of aspects of moral panic, sex work, working musicians, yellow journalism, all that fun stuff. So if that's the kind of thing you might be interested in, I would recommend that.
Cool. I definitely, when you first started saying that title, did not expect the dates that were going to come at the end of it. So that was fun.
No, it's good times. I'm taking a couple of history courses around that time period, so I knew I would be interested. Peel factors.
Yeah. I mean, music. Music is kind of like universally a thing.
Most people enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. As Matthew says, most people enjoy it.
I say that, like, I do enjoy music. What I listen to, people may not consider to be music.
I was going to say, you enjoy sounds.
Matthew apologizes to me a lot about making me listen to his music. But honestly, like, he has expanded my musical horizons quite a bit. And there is definitely some stuff that I never would have experienced except for him.
I'm not even into noise no. music, you know? Like, it's not, I'm not at that stage.
No.
I'm really into noise music. This is why I have headphones that I wear all the time.
Yeah, no, you're just, it's just more electronic music. But anyways, okay, we're not here to talk about music. We're here to talk about the appeal factors of reading about music.
I think it can be really interesting to read about when you're reading about specific bands or genres or whatever, like the socio whatever background that led to it being created. Like, how did something new start? I think can be really interesting to discover.
I totally agree with that. And I will say, from the perspective of somebody who avoided a lot of music nonfiction because I associated it with biographies about people as opposed to materials about the cultural mm-hmm. background and the situation and just a broader scope of it, my experience, both of these books that I read technically count as either memoir / autobiography or biography. Mm-hmm. And yet the way that they are both framed is so much more about the culture and the world around them that, to me, that is what I wanted and that was interesting.
You can have also like a memoir structured around music that is not about the person making music.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah.
Like why certain music was important to you at certain points in your life. It could be something you could structure an essay or a book around.
Oh, for sure. Or a way of describing a time period by talking about the music
yeah.
that occurred at the same time. So yeah, we've talked about the sort of social, political, historical aspects of different time periods. It can be fun to read those memoirs and biographies by artists that you or anyone in particular enjoys.
I do think it is important not to minimize the importance of celebrity as a motivator, because that is a big motivator. May not be one for me, but for a lot of people, that's a huge motivator. People want to read about other people that they see as these kind of iconic figures in our world or driving cultural figures in our world. They want to feel like they have some sort of understanding of where that's coming from, or sometimes they want to feel closer to them or connected to them or see a connection between their lives and their understandings of the world, or feel like they could learn something from them or things like that. Like, that's all valid and important ways of experiencing these. So I think that that can be for some people a motivator. So to me, that is something that I learned through this reading experience, is the difference between those different motivators for why something like music biography or autobiography or music literature on a broader scale could be, you know, important for people.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We briefly mentioned learning to play instruments, or I guess you could maybe learn other music production related aspects. I know, like, it's a whole world out there that I know only a portion of. So definitely learning things about different ways of creating music.
And then learning ways about, I don't know, interpreting or understanding music is a big one. I often feel like I run across weird little things here and there, usually in essay format or sometimes on Twitter or stuff like that, where people are talking about interpretations of lyrics. And I'm like, I don't know why I have the ability to, like, unpack novels and poetry and stuff. But, like, for some reason you put it in lyric format and I'm like, I don't know what that means. I don't know. I lost that skill somewhere. And I kind of sometimes wish that I had more of that ability, because it's always interesting to me to see people who are unpacking the meanings in lyrics or even in the structural meanings of sounds and music. So there is something there too that could be really engaging for people.
I recently realized that I hate lyric videos because I don't want to know the lyrics of songs.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
I find that understanding what they're actually talking about, like, kind of ruin music for me sometimes.
Oh, I'm so the opposite.
It's just very different things of enjoyment.
I put a lot of effort as a young person into learning lyrics of various things.
And I'm, like, somewhere in between. Like, Matthew really seriously does not, when he says he doesn't listen to the lyrics, he really seriously does not. He isn't a clue what's being said. And he also doesn't want to know. And, like, it's very true. And I'm not, like, a person who memorizes lyrics or, like, creates deep connections to them for the most part. But I also sometimes do. Like, they can hit and they can make a difference in the music and the way I experience the music. I remember actually once I was in Barnes and Noble and I was just, like, a tired, exhausted day. I think it was a weekend after a long work week. And I was just sat down to read a book at their cafe and I popped in some music, you know, and earbuds and was listening to it. And I actually, like, it was an album, I'm trying to even remember who it was by. It was an album about, a concept album about somebody that they love dying of cancer. I know, right? it sounds intense. Matthew's just, like, flinching over here. And I remember, like, actually, like, crying in Barnes and Noble as I listened to one of the songs in this album, as I really, for the first time, fully listened to, like, what they were saying and how it was unpacking. And it was just so beautiful and impactful and powerful. And the phrasing of it and the timing of how they were saying things and all of it just, like, worked together in such a really powerful way. And so I was sitting there bawling my eyes out. Well, not bawling. I was trying to be subtle about it, but I was definitely crying in a Barnes and Noble because I was so impacted by the power of that song. I'll try to link it in the show notes, but I cannot off the top of my head remember what it was.
While we are, I feel like we've wandered a little away from appeal factors about books, but I didn't have another place to mention this, but I think it's relevant to mention for the episode that the like big Christmas gift that I am after this year is to get a record player and start a vinyl album collection. Because I want to be able to listen to music without engaging with a screen. Mm. Because right now, all of my music options, like I own some CDs, but if I want to play them, I have to put them into something that has a screen on it.
Yeah.
So maybe this time next year, I will be much more well-versed in music if I'm able to engage with it in a different way. And maybe that's an appeal factor of music nonfiction, is engaging with music in a different way.
Yeah.
And I gotta say, like, being able to go back to experiencing albums instead of playlists is really nice sometimes.
Nonsense.
Yeah, that was actually addressed in sort of an interesting way in the book I read, the Uprooted book, talked a little bit about that. But I remember having it that time frame in my mid-20s where I did the same thing. I was like really into listening to full albums as a piece of art, as opposed to like just the specific songs you like the most. We're so funny. All right, time for our outro. Let's go eat dinner. I'm hungry. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Book Club for Masochists. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. Like, rate, subscribe, and leave us a positive review.
For all URLs and social media accounts, the four in our name is a numeral. You can go to our website at bookclub4m.com, join our Facebook group at facebook.com/group/bookclub4m, and find us on Twitter or on Instagram at bookclub4m. Our email address is bookclub4m@gmail.com.
On our website, you can find show notes that will provide links to things we mentioned, social media info for everyone who appeared in this episode, and our genre-based book list of titles by authors of color.
You can suggest a genre or title for us to read or request a recommendation from us. We have a form you can fill out at that website, bookclub4m.com. We can't make any promises on reading the specific things that you suggest, but if you ask for a recommendation, we will definitely give you one.
All opinions are our own and do not reflect our places of employment, if they exist.
Our theme music is To Arrakis by Dark Sun from the Free Music Archive.
New episodes are the first and third Tuesday of every month.
Join us again on Tuesday, November 19th, when we'll be talking about adaptations of books. I won't.
I was going to say, how does it end up that usually the person who is reading the one is always the person who's not going to be there, like when one of us is absent? Then, on Tuesday, December 7th, we'll be discussing the genre of thrillers.
And don't forget to go to our Twitter account where you can vote for which genre of romance you would like us to be reading.
Vote Amish.
Megan has an opinion. Please. Matthew really doesn't want it.
Vote for anything but Amish.
I have a sneaky feeling that contemporary might win, but maybe it won't because maybe it's the most boring. We'll see. Maybe they'll surprise us. Maybe we'll have to read Western.
Surprise us!
I don't know why Matthew thinks Western would be better than Amish, though.
Yo, I'd fucking rather eat Amish. Read Amish, I think.
Eat Amish or read it. You said October.
You said October 5th.
Yes, I am aware of things.
Like time. Shub John Gresh.
Eat radishes, read Amishes.
Blah. And I just cannot get that out. I'm like, I keep saying the wrong thing over and over.
I have not stopped yet. I'll stop right now.